As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
All right, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Buffalo Beat. The Bills suffering their second straight loss. This one, a barn burner of a game. A 33-30 overtime, back and forth, second half, really last like minute of the game with a lot of different emotional swings. They lose, the Bills lose to the Minnesota Vikings. Even though it kind of seemed like they had the game won in a few different stages, but we'll get into much of that as we march forward into the postgame pod. My name is Joe Piscaglia. Thanks, everybody, for hanging out with me on this postgame edition of the show. And lots to get into because this is a game that has created some, I don't know if panic is the right word, but some disharmony within the fan base. I think people were of the expectation that, and you know, rightfully so, that when a team like the Bills have a 17-point lead in the second half, they should be able to put away the game. But the Bills did not. And so it's led to some of the disharmony that I'm talking about, where, you know, the excuses of not being sharp or Josh Allen saying, "It's on me," for the second game in a row. It's not necessarily being as well received as it was because obviously it's a second loss in a row. So that is naturally going to happen. But I'm really interested in diving into where they kind of go from here. Obviously going to break down how it unfolded, why it happened the way that it did, and then get into where they go from here. And there's a few different pieces to this puzzle. You know, from a defensive standpoint, we knew that Justin Jefferson was one of the best, if not the best wide receiver in all the league, and he was probably going to get his yards, not to that degree, but his yards and his catches. That's just, you know, they kind of played it similarly with Cooper Kupp back in week one. He got his yards and catches, and but it didn't prevent them from coming through with that victory. This one, you know, they messed up on one rushing play throughout the game. That wound up burning them quite a bit. And then a lot of mental errors on the offensive side, which set them up for what we saw unfold on the defensive side, too. So, yeah, like I said, lots to get into. So we're just going to jump right into it because I think the thing that everyone's kind of talking about here is Josh Allen. And this is now the second straight game that they have lost where they have had a lead in the second half. He has made some questionable, at best, decisions with the football. I think the term reckless comes to mind, especially in some pretty high-pressure situations where he's making errors that we have not really seen him do to a grand scale since he has kind of rounded into this form of a MVP level player. It felt like he kind of pushed that to the back burner of what he is and what he was earlier in his career. But this is now the second straight game where it's happened. And even if you want to go to the Packers game, where the Bills weren't all that sharp in the second half, they allowed the Packers kind of hang around, and that game winds up being a bit closer at 27-17 than the whole game felt. But it's because the Bills kind of let the Packers hang around in that one. So now in this game, this Vikings game, Allen made some incredible plays. Don't get me wrong. And this is not like an all bad thing, because the Bills, they put up 30 points. They were on the doorstep of winning multiple times. And it seemed like that they could have won on a few different occasions, but they just really couldn't piece it together. And Allen was the most important piece. And it's gotten to the point where in these high pressure situations, we haven't seen as much of the Josh Allen that is as poised as we have in the past. Like, you think back to, I don't know, the Chiefs game is the obvious example, not the regular season Chiefs game from earlier this year, but the Chiefs playoff game from last year, where he was just dialed in. Didn't matter what defense was coming at him, he knew where he wanted to go with the ball. And it really all started once the Bills kind of figured things out against this new world, against two high safety looks. Once that kind of opened up for them, there was just a different level of calm and poise to Allen, to where he just, it seemed like he was playing in a different stratosphere than he had been before. But that player that we saw, maybe even early this season, but definitely last year, that player has kind of gone to the wayside a little bit. Not to say that player isn't there, because I do think that version of Allen is in there, but I do think he's going through it right now. And granted, went through the injury this past week. I do have some thoughts as to how that might have played into what we saw of Josh Allen this week. But there are some non-starter decisions from Josh Allen in this game. He kind of explained the way that first interception as, you know, that just a play to try to make a play on fourth and two, because if it fell incomplete, then it was going to be the Vikings ball regardless. You know, the interception was probably the worst possible scenario out of that, because not only did the Vikings get the ball, but Patrick Peterson also rushed it out to the Vikings 34-yard line and set them up for a shortened field to ultimately get their next touchdown to bring it to 27-23. That is an important piece to it, because anything else would have been fine other than that, whether it be an incompletion. Obviously, the optimal would have been them, from their perspective, would have been to convert on the fourth down. So that's the optimal, but incompletion would have worked sufficiently. Even getting sacked for a 3 or 4 yard loss, still a lot better. That's still them forcing the Vikings to start from their own 10 or 11 yard line, makes their lives that much more difficult to get down the field. But that extra 24, 20, 23 yards of cushion to where they can maneuver themselves down the field, definitely helps. So that was a horrific decision. Then the missed botched snap at the goal line. They had the game in their hands after an outstanding stop at the goal line by the Bills defense. Like they deserve a lot of credit for stepping up in that situation. And then again, in overtime, to shut the door and force the Vikings into a field goal. Like, yeah, they allowed 33 points, but they stepped up in high-pressure situations. So I don't want to take too much of a fine-tooth comb on what they did, especially late in the game, to help try and set them up. If we're being honest here, the offense probably should have put the Vikings away at certain points in the second half, but they failed to. But that snap, you know, whether it was, you think it was Mitch Morse's fault or Josh Allen's, I mean, just judging it on the replay, we don't actually know what happened, how it happened, but it certainly seemed like the snap was there. So Allen put that on himself. Morse put the snap on him. Probably lean toward Allen, but that's the thing of it. You need a clean exchange. You need to be able to have that clean exchange, because if you get two clean snaps and you don't get pushed backwards for a safety, you win the game. Point blank period, as Leotis McKelvin would say. You win that game if that happens. And Allen screwed that up. But that was less of a reckless decision-making thing and more of a, maybe the moment getting a little bit too heavy for him at that spot. I don't know. I don't know what it was. He hasn't shown where the moment gets too big for him before, but that was a tough spot. And then the interception in overtime is obviously just his worst decision of the game. It was 2nd and 10. He had Devin Singletary as a dump down option. And instead of living to fight another down, he tried to go for the kill shot. And the Vikings baited him into it. And what we ended up seeing was the end of the game. Allen knew that he took the bait. He admitted as much after the game about explaining what he saw. Just, those are the types of plays where the Vikings are, they're not the best defense in the world, but they do have some really good players like Harrison Smith, who's one of the better safeties in the league. You try to push the envelope against those guys in that situation, they're preying on that situation. So, optimally, if Allen would have just dumped it down to Singletary, or it doesn't even have to be Singletary. I'll wait to see the coach's film, but Singletary is the obvious option because you could see him on the broadcast copy. You dump it down to him. It's at worst batted down, incompletion. You get 3rd and 10. You complete it to Singletary. Gets a few yards, maybe even 5. Sets up a 3rd and 7, 3rd and 5. Brings you to another chance to get a first down rather than trying to force the issue. Heck, maybe even 2 chances, because it seemed like the Bills were trying to go for the win there above all else. But instead, Allen goes for everything right then and there rather than taking what is given to him. And this has kind of been the critique of what he has done the past couple of weeks, which brings us to the broader point. Because we can sit here and discuss where he screwed up. We all know where he screwed up, but it's the why that is more important than anything. And I think what we are seeing unfold over these last 2 weeks, maybe even last 3, if you want to go into that Packers game a little bit, is we are seeing this quarterback try and put everything on his shoulders to make things go. And it's devolving a little bit into this 2019 version of the offense where Allen has to, well, maybe even he feels like he has to bail out the team rather than, you know, what we saw at the end of last year, where it's the run game helping to set things up, bring defenders down towards towards the box, and then hitting them over the top. Or even if you're not passing or running the ball a ton, let's say everything down the field is covered up. It's taking what is given. And it's not to say that Allen did this the entire game. Like I said at the earlier in the show, there was plenty of moments of brilliance where it looked like a certain play was dead. He would roll out, he would find a receiver, and the Bills would get a first down. Like, that is, even though we are sitting here criticizing him for his mistakes, he still put that into the register. They still scored 30 points. So it's tough to be overwhelmingly critical just because they did perform, specifically in the first half. The second half was a bit of a mess, if we're honest. But it's in these huge moments, specifically in the second half of games, because this is now two in a row, where it's not quite like this thing where you need to, where they should panic about it or anything along those lines. But I think it's very much a talking point about how to anticipate what they do moving forward. Because they're going to continue to see similar looks, and they did a better job against Too High in this game. The Jets, they sprung it on him, and Allen didn't react well to it. But it's in those huge moments that Allen needs to feel that same uncomfortable feeling anytime he thinks, you know what, I'm just going to wing this in there. But it's kind of a sweet spot, right? Because you have this incredible MVP-level quarterback when he is firing on all cylinders. So you don't want to rein him in too much. But you also have to find that comfortable middle where he is still able to dice up, or not even dice up, just take what is given underneath. And if that defense continues to give that underneath stuff all game long, then keep taking it, which is why you bring in guys like James Cook and Nyheim Hines to where they can be suitable dump down options for you that can get you more yards than maybe Devin Singletary isn't. And Singletary still does a fairly decent job of it himself by making a guy miss or maybe trying to barrel through contact. That's why it just needs to have a more centralized attention to detail. And I do wonder, and I wrote about this over at The Athletic in my 7 observations, which you can go read right now at theathletic.com/thebuffalobeat. Get yourself a little discount on your yearly subscription. If you have listened to the show for a while, you have probably heard me say something along the lines of, one of the things that makes Josh Allen one of the things that has helped contribute to him becoming what he is today is how he is able to see what he did wrong one week, feel it, really take it in, kind of beat himself up over it, and then the next game, it'll be like it never happened, and that part of his game is out. We didn't see that this time because this is a repeat of mistakes. But I do wonder if, and this could be like a human nature thing, because so much attention, not only on the outside, but with him, was placed upon this injury that he suffered late against the Jets, that I do wonder if he never really felt that same sense of dread and uncomfortableness when he was going back and watching that Jets game, because maybe he was split brain about whether or not he would actually be able to play, and going through testing and everything like that wasn't a similar game week to where he has had these moments and these games in the past. And one game that he always brings up is when they went against the Patriots. I think it was back in 2019, and he was just horrible. Terrible interceptions, terrible decisions. And that game and how he lived in the uncomfortable in the couple of days after helped him learn that he can't do stuff like that anymore. So I wonder, because of the injury, and this is not an excuse by any chance, by any stretch of the imagination, because what he did out there in the second half, in those key moments, not good enough. Did a lot of things that were good, but especially in overtime when they had the Vikings on the ropes, seemed like they were going to march down and get a touchdown, or at the very least force a tie game at 33 apiece. He blew that opportunity. So this is not an excuse for him, but I do think it's kind of human nature to where if you're dealing with an injury and whether or not you'll be able to play, your sole focus on what happened in the last week isn't exactly as razor sharp because you've just got other stuff going on in the brain. Like, think about it. He was convinced, like, yeah, it's just a little pain, he'll get through it. That's what he said after the Jets game. But when you're going through all those testing and the team wants to be sure and extra sure that this is not going to be a long-term injury and that they would not put him at risk of injuring himself, re-injuring himself even worse than before. So all of these things, all of these hypotheticals are probably rolling around the brain. So it's just human nature. You can't really intently focus on how it felt the previous week. But I think he has that opportunity now. Now that the Bills got through the game, I'm sure they'll check on it and everything like that. But if Josh Allen played in this game, odds are he's going to play next week. So this is a really important next couple of days for him to feel that same level of uncomfortable that helps spur on the change that we've seen in previous years, previous weeks, everything like that. Because his turnover-worthy plays this year, I mean, there have been a lot. The interception total has been up there, but I do think it is something that is correctable based on what we have seen from him previously. And it's not just him. I mean, there's execution with his teammates around him. Like, he needs some better pass blocking from time to time. He definitely needs a more semblance of a rushing game from his running backs. And it's not the running backs. It's the dedication to do that. It's the guys up front. It's everything all in one. And we'll get there. But it all starts with him and being able to take those calculated risks when they're there, as opposed to forcing a ball into a bad spot, which he has done far too often over the last two games. So it's a big next few days for Josh, and I think he's going to respond well to them if what he has done previously is an indicator, and usually it is. It all ends up the same way. So I do think we're going to see a bit of a renewed focus from Allen in the coming weeks, and maybe a different sort of way that he approaches quarterbacking and his decision making while he's back there. So big ol' we'll see, but we do have the benefit of knowledge of past happenings with him. So Allen just needs to be better, point blank. It has to happen. And there is nothing to me that indicates that this is going to be a problem that persists. Just needs to get back to the player that he was before this stretch of games. And I think it's in there. I do. But this is kind of bigger than Josh Allen, and One of the things that I've been kind of kicking around the brain for a little bit, haven't really, you know, gone too overboard with it, just because I want to see enough evidence before saying something like this, but I have been slightly underwhelmed by offensive coordinator Ken Dorsey. And I don't say that lightly, because I do recall Brian Daboll's first year as the offensive coordinator. It seemed like a lot of people were frustrated with him and the results of the offense, but I think a lot of that was talent-based, and you could see certain amounts of creativity. You could see concepts and just really trying a lot of different things. With Dorsey, there still are some good moments. Like, this is still a good offense that put up 30 points. I can't say that enough, because this is not a sky is falling loss. This is a jarring loss to a 7-1 team. It's probably not as good as 7-1, and probably one that they should have beaten, but they still scored 30 points. Regardless, the reason I have been underwhelmed with Ken Dorsey so far is because I just feel like, from what we've seen, this offense is far more predictable than what they were under Brian Daboll. And it's tough, because Daboll has had a lot of years' experience play calling. But that same level of creativity that they had from Daboll, just trying stuff out, some of it works, some of it doesn't, that same level of creativity has not been there in the way. And I'm not expecting him to be exactly carbon copy of Brian Daboll by any stretch of the imagination. But when you are not able to keep the defense guessing a little bit, then it becomes a bit more of an over-reliance on Allen. So that's why these two problems that we're talking about, or the Allen problem, it can also morph into this idea that because maybe they are not as unpredictable, as creative as they were last year, that leads to a situation where you're over-reliant on the quarterback to do something, whether it's with his arm or with his legs. And we have seen Allen scramble like crazy the last couple of weeks. It's worked on some drives. Like in overtime, I thought he was going to do the whole thing by himself. Just making people miss, lowering the shoulder, getting contact. But we also saw the same, not the same personnel, but pretty close to it, operate in a way where Allen isn't even thinking of scrambling. And he's beating the opponents with his mind. And the play calling is there. And the concepts are there. Not, less so the play calling, because I often think that that's kind of a, you know, the, I don't like to blame play calling. Like specific plays. It's more so concepts, setup, everything like that. I just have been a bit underwhelmed by what Dorsey's been able to do.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
And we have also seen them completely abandon the running game with their backs. I mean, Allen is a different story because he scrambles, and so it inflates their rushing statistics a bit. Not a bit, a lot. But over the last 2 weeks, when the Bills have mostly been ahead in those two games against the Jets, of course, they erased a two-possession lead to come back and win that game. And then the Bills against the Vikings, where the Vikings were down 17 points at one point. Over those last two games, second half only of those two games, there has been a total of 56 offensive plays by the Bills. Only 11 of them were carries to running backs. That is 19.6% of their snaps in the second half over the last 2 weeks. And it's not just culling them, which I know it's a jarring statistic because it's 80.4% pass or 80.4% not giving the ball to running backs on a carry. There's also execution of the offensive line, execution of the running backs themselves. Maybe you don't get the look you want in from the defense. It all adds into it. But overall, there has been an abandonment of getting those running backs involved in the second half. And we heard McDermott after the Jets game say that they were at times, and we pointed this out on the pod, at times too one-dimensional. I asked him about that sort of feeling that he got after the Jets game, how it translated over, especially with the fact that the running backs in the second half against the Vikings, second half and overtime, I should say, only had 7 touches. And that's combo of Singletary, Cook, Hines, and Duke Johnson. So only 7 carries over all that time in the second half. It leads them to be, once again, the word that I use with Dorsey, to be more predictable. And, you know, you don't want to sit here and advocate for them to take away from their fastball, which is the passing offense, but there's a lot of merit to how they turned things around offensively and how they reached a different level once they ran the ball more effectively. And not more often, just more effectively. So abandoning that in this game, and McDermott said something like that he felt like they were doing a better job of it in the first half. Yeah, absolutely. But the second half, when you're trying to close a team out, you're only rushing the ball 7 times. And you had the lead for most of the second half. Just doesn't make a lot of sense to me. Not most of the second half. All but like, what was it, 41 seconds at the end of the game? I think there needs to be a bit more of a focus on how they want things to look, to feel, what they're calling in the second half. Because this is now 2 straight weeks where teams, good teams, but teams have been able to get back into it and steal a win. Jets and Vikings. Those are 2 games that the Bills, if they are able to capitalize on like one or two drives over those 2 games, Bills are probably, 8-1 right now. But the Jets and Vikings did a great job in both of those games to come back. And they the Bills deserve to lose those games with how they unraveled in the second halves. So where does Dorsey go from here? I don't think this is like they need to fire this guy or anything. No, it's not like that. I think it's still maintaining a healthy look at what he's going to do. But I do think this is an important juncture for Dorsey, for Allen, for that entire offense. Because I do think that they have the pieces there and they have the concepts there. It just needs to be a sharpened way of operating, I guess is how I want to put it. I do think Dorsey can be a good offensive coordinator. I just haven't seen, and it's tough going from Dable to Dorsey because Dable was great. One of the best out there. And Dorsey's in his first year, so there is growing pains. There are growing pains, excuse me. It's almost midnight. Now it's just on him, on them, everyone to be able to get them through it. Because the bones of a dynamic and elite offense are still there. Which is why it's not panic time or anything along those lines. But Dorsey can help Allen and the offense in general with being a little bit more unpredictable, recommitting to the run a little bit when they're trying to win the game down the stretch. And that is the way to lead toward unpredictability. I don't have all the answers for what Dorsey needs to do, how the X's and O's to get him to that point, but it has not been an impressive few weeks for him, for them. And so now, just like it is for Allen, same goes for Dorsey. Very important week coming up here to see how they respond and what they're able to do against a Browns defense that is very susceptible to yards and points from what we saw this past or Sunday against the Dolphins, where they put up 39 on them. Tua had 3 touchdowns and they put up a bunch of yards rushing. This was a Vikings team that was susceptible to the ground game, and they had success doing it in the first half, which is why it's so confounding as to how they couldn't do it in the second, or why they didn't commit to it more in the second. So we will see how Dorsey and Allen responds going into this game, because it's very important for them. If it goes from a 2-game losing streak to 3, then you're setting yourself up for a bit of a world of trouble, because right now the Bills, you know, they're still fine. They're 6-3. They're only half a game, or they're 1 game out of the AFC East lead. They beat Miami. They're in business. But they're also only a game ahead of the cut line for the AFC playoffs in general. So just a little fire that needs to burn underneath them, and we'll see how they do from there. All right, let's get into the award portion of the program, because there's a few different elements that I think help lead into it. I haven't even talked about Justin Jefferson yet, but he was outstanding in that game. He sometimes you just have to tip the cap to an elite player. I don't think it was in the cards to allow him to get 193 yards, which I believe is the 6th most in a single game that the Bills have ever allowed. But I do think that the Bills were expecting Jefferson to be a factor. They just wanted to limit what he could do. I don't think anyone anticipated him falling backwards and one-handing a pass out of Cam Lewis's hands on fourth down. That's another opportunity that should have been the game, but it wasn't. But let's get into some awards because there's going to be a lot to chew on as the week kind of goes here. And there are a lot of elements to the game and the pregame that warrants our attention. So we're going to kick it off with the Dree Archer Award for the player that did not show up at all today. And I'm going to go with Jaquan Johnson, who had his starting role ripped from him after what he did against the Jets last week. It was not a good game for Jaquan Johnson at all. And it was one of those where it was a soberingly bad game to where maybe the Bills collectively have changed their opinion on who he is in within their building, what they think of him and how they move forward from here at the safety position. Because not only did he not start the game, it was Cam Lewis making his first ever start. The converted cornerback who didn't play safety up until late August. He got his first start. Thought, you know, outside of that Justin Jefferson bad beat, thought he did fairly well in spots. But well enough to where they could get by for a long portion. Because, you know, we talk about Justin Jefferson getting 193 yards. He also went through like a 31-play lull where he did not have a catch. And he was kind of stuck at 5 for 105. And then he woke up for another 5 for, what was it, 88 yards and in 18 or 19 plays or something like that. Yeah, he woke up all right, but the Bills did a nice enough job. But Johnson, not only was he not the starter, but when Cam Lewis left the game with an injury for just one snap, it was Dean Marlowe that entered the game, not Johnson. So that means that Johnson is now fifth on the depth chart in the Bills' eyes. Behind Jordan Poyer, DeMar Hamlin, now Cam Lewis, and now Dean Marlowe. So Dree Archer Award fittingly goes to Jaquan Johnson. Still played on special teams, mixed in there for a couple of defensive snaps on the goal line, but his starting job is gone. Next up is the Vontae Davis Award for the player that didn't show up in the second half. And this is not exactly the fault of this player. Actually, a couple of guys. These players, it's more so the fault of how the Bills moved away from this way of playing. So the Vontae Davis Award goes to Reggie Gilliam and Bobby Hart, who each did not get a snap in the second half, from what I put together. Let me just double check on that. Bobby Hart. Oh, he had one. He had one, which was on the fumble. The fumble at the goal line. That was Bobby Hart's only snap in the second half. He had three in the first half. Gilliam had four in the first half. Gilliam did not have a single snap in the second half. So if the Bills are trying to put away the game and they have a defense, a middle of a defense, their defensive tackles in general, because they were without Dalvin Tomlinson last week, the Commanders ran on them successfully. And it's not like the Commanders have a great offensive line. The Bills just went away from it. And these plays where they were mixing in the fullback, mixing in a sixth offensive lineman, they just weren't doing it anymore. So my Vontae Davis Award goes to them, but it's not so much them. It probably goes, right? It's probably got to go to Ken Dorsey for that then. Because this is kind of what we're talking about. Over the last two games, only 19.6% of their second half offensive snaps have been rushing attempts by running backs. And they have been ahead for basically all of those snaps. It's worth pointing out. All right, next up we have the Matt Barkley Award for the player or thing that caught you by surprise for a good reason. And I'm going to go with Duke Johnson, who got the call up for this game kind of out of nowhere. Didn't really see any signs of it throughout the practice week or anything like that. But they called him up and got about 5 offensive snaps, most of which came in the second half, but got 5. But I think I was more impressed by his kickoff returning ability. It's not the fastest anymore, but very confident on the ball and broke out some good returns throughout the game that set the Bills up in good positions. And it does make you wonder that whether or not they have a spot for him. I don't know that they'll be able to find one, but it was interesting that they gave him those responsibilities over Isaiah McKenzie. Remains to be seen how they kind of go forward with it, but they dressed 5 running backs in this game, Tywan Jones included. But he's more of a special teams guy than anything. But 4 running backs that took snaps at running back on offense. That is way out of the norm from how they normally go. I mean, remember the last couple of years, they usually went with 2 running backs. It was Singletary and Cook, or Singletary and Matt Breda. But 4? We'll see if that's a trend moving forward. But you do, just based on the kickoff return stuff, I do wonder if maybe they try and find a spot for Duke Johnson. I don't know where. Maybe it's an injured reserve thing. I don't really know that they have a player to do that with, but it was impressive enough to at least consider. They do have 1 more practice squad elevation with him that maybe they fire up before too long. So, Matt Barkley Award goes to Duke Johnson. The Blaine Gabbert Award for Perseverance goes to Boogie Basham, who out of nowhere had a sack in the second half against the Vikings in this one. And why it really came out of nowhere is because he had a total of, 21 snaps by my count. He only had 8 leading up to, no, I'm not looking at it correctly. He had, 16 of his 21 snaps come in the second half. So he only had 5 first half snaps. And the Bills only dressed 4 defensive ends. So it's not as though they had to worry about an extra person in the rotation. But Boogie Basham was the clear distant 4th to Von Miller, AJ Epenesa, and Shaq Lawson. And Basham, when Christian Darrisaw went out, mind you, the left tackle for the Vikings, who's very good, Basham, on a 1st and 10 in the 4th quarter, puts together a sack that it was 1st and 10. Puts the Vikings in a bad situation, and then another sack by the Bills leads to the 4th and 18 play, which we well know went to Justin Jefferson, and that kind of went to the wayside. But Boogie Basham, Blaine Gabbert Award for Perseverance, because he didn't get any time in the first half basically whatsoever, and he was able to get a sack on a good pass rush. So good on Boogie Basham. And then the Gotta Watch the Tape Award, which it really can't go to anything else in my mind than to the overall theatrics of the pregame by the Buffalo Bills with Josh Allen. Really, it extends to the week because they did not have him out there in any capacity during the media viewing portion of practice, whether it was stretching, which was on all three of Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, or individual drills, which is on Wednesday and Thursday that we can see. So we didn't see him at all. Then on Friday, when we come into the field house after practice, he darts off when the media gets in there, as we saw from John Scott's video. John Scott of Spectrum, by the way. And then it extended into the pregame warmups because Allen did not go on the field at all for pregame warmups. Like, it was Case Keenum warming up all the Case Keenum and Matt Barkley warming up all the receivers. Allen did not touch the field until after the inactives came out and after he was in full uniform going out there, to which we started seeing little signs that he would probably start by taking the first snap from Mitch Morse as soon as he got out there and then taking the first snap of 11 on 11. But it all felt pretty dramatic. I tweeted a similar sentiment, but it just felt a little overboard. And I know, competitive advantage against the Vikings, but if you listen to anything from Kevin O'Connell throughout the week, and I talked with our Vikings beat writer at The Athletic, Alec Lewis, who does a really nice job. And he's like, yeah, right from the get-go on Wednesday, Kevin O'Connell was saying, yeah, we're anticipating Allen playing. And they had their practice squad guy use the number 17 jersey. There was really not a lot of deception going on. But the Bills committed to the bit. So I give them credit for that. However, just a weird week. Like, I don't know. I was getting ready to go to a friend's surprise birthday party, and it was like 3-4 o'clock. I knew the practice squad elevations and the NFL transactions come out in the late afternoon on Saturdays, which would be the last opportunity for the Bills to elevate Matt Barkley. And so I was like constantly refreshing, just glued to my phone, trying to figure out if Matt Barkley was going to be elevated. Like, to the point where, as driving to the surprise party, having my wife refresh the NFL transaction log, see if it came out. It's just a lot of energy, a lot of weirdness to the week that is just like, was that really necessary? But I guess to the Bills it was worth it. But I guess never say never, but I can't see another week of that, especially since Allen just played. We have to see if maybe there'll be another weird week that kind of tops this one. But this was definitely the weirdest week leading up to a game in terms of, you know, just weird storyline and how things kind of unfolded. Probably one of the weirder ones since Rex was the head coach. So, it's saying something, especially because they've been pretty straightforward under the McDermott and Bean regime. But they wanted the competitive advantage, I guess. So, gotta watch the tape on the entire week. See where we all went wrong. And just how early in the week that the Bills knew that Josh Allen would be playing. Like I said, I don't think we're going to go through that again this week, but I could be wrong. Hopefully, we have more answers. And that way, the Bills can kind of hone in on the Browns as opposed to whether or not their starting quarterback is going to be playing in the game. Because I think that would certainly benefit them if they have all the attention on what's upcoming as opposed to what's going on with the starting quarterback's elbow. So we'll see. But the Bills, this is no reason to me, in kind of a big picture look at this, it's no reason to me that that people should panic about them or think to themselves that they're not as good as you think they are. This is still a really good team. Great team, even. They have lost 3 games out of 9. Those 3 games were by a combined 7 points. 2-point loss to Miami. 3-point loss to the Jets. 3-point loss to the Vikings. Those 3 teams have 7, 6, and 8 wins out of their first 9 games. Those are good teams. Vikings probably more like a 6-3 caliber team that has gotten really lucky with 7 straight victories in which have come by 1 possession. Ridiculous. Random. Probably going to bite them later on in the year, but still a good team. They have the best receiver in the game in Justin Jefferson. But there is no reason to panic about the Bills losing this game, even though they let one go. I think what's important is that they respond to now a 2-game losing streak, because they do have an opponent coming up in the Cleveland Browns that I think they can get their stuff together and get right a little bit here. Because they're not quite there offensively. They've got a good rushing attack, so they're going to have to be better in that capacity and not giving up the big play. But the Bills did a much better job this time around, outside of that big play, of limiting the Vikings' rushing attack. Can't take it away because it happened and they screwed up. But there are signs of improvement there. And then on offense, the Bills should be able to move the ball quite a bit against the Browns based on what we've seen previously. So that's why it's not a panic situation. They're still right in the thick of things for AFC, AFC East, top seed. It's all in front of them. They're only 9 games in. Is the road a bit more difficult now? Yeah, absolutely. They need to stack a lot of wins. They're probably going to have to get to 13-4 to secure that top overall seed in the AFC, which means they would have to go 7-1 down the stretch. Doable, but they've got some tough games coming up. Dolphins, Jets, a couple of Patriots games. There's the Bengals in there. Doable, like I said. But this is still a really good team that's just going through a rut right now and that need to find answers, which is why this week of preparation is so significant to them to maybe open things back up once the schedule gets a little bit more difficult after these next 2 weeks. They've got the Browns and Lions next 2. After that, the AFC East gauntlet is coming. So how do they respond? That is what I'm most interested in. Because I do think that despite all their deficiencies over the last 2 weeks, offensively, and from what we saw from Josh Allen, there are still plenty of signs that they can iron this thing out. Because we have seen them do it, and I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt that they'll be able to pull themselves out of this because we have seen them do it before, specifically last year. It's now just a matter of actually doing it because their Super Bowl dreams, their dreams of getting that top seed and having the playoffs come through Buffalo, that is not as promising as it once was, at least the top seed part. So now we just have to see how they respond. And that's what it all boils down to. But plenty of stuff to think about throughout the week coming up. All right. That's going to do it for me. Thanks, everyone, for listening to this episode of the Buffalo Beat. I appreciate you all for listening. Hopefully, you gets you through the Monday, kind of dicing things up. Maybe a little bit of, you know, not even optimism, just like big picture stuff. I'm big on that stuff. So hopefully this helped you talk through it a little bit. All right. So thanks, everyone, for listening. You'll next hear from me in the build-up to the Browns game, and we will see what the Bills do with their second straight home game, this one against the Browns, and to see if they can reverse their two-game losing streak into a win and getting to their seventh victory in 10 tries. So thanks, everyone, for listening, and we will talk to you later in the week. See you then.